Exodus chapter 14. I've appreciated Brother Tozer's messages, and this morning he alluded a little bit to the subject that I feel led to speak about tonight and maybe to expound upon a little bit of what he introduced to us this morning. Exodus chapter 14, I want to begin reading in verse number 10. The Bible says, "And when Pharaoh drew nigh, the children of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them, and they were sore afraid. And the children of Israel cried unto the Lord, and they said unto Moses, Because there were no graves in Egypt, hast thou taken us away to die in the wilderness? Wherefore hast thou dealt thus with us, to carry us forth out of Egypt? Is not this the word that we did tell thee in Egypt, saying, Let us alone, that we may serve the Egyptians, for it had been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness. And Moses said unto the people, Fear ye not, stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will show to you today. For the Egyptians whom ye have seen today, ye shall see them again no more forever. And the Lord shall fight for you, and ye shall hold your peace." Tonight I want to talk to you about an awful sin. It's a despicable sin. It's one that paralyzes us. It's one that neutralizes us. It's a sin that brings us to our knees spiritually and renders us useless. It's a sin that if you let it prevail in your life, there is no doubt that it'll destroy you. And some of you tonight say, well, he must be talking about bitterness. He must be talking about adultery. No, I'm talking about something that I think is just as important tonight. You say, what is that? It's simply this, doubting God. By the time we come to Israel in Exodus 14, they're still rather relatively young in their history. Let me take you back to the book of Genesis. Do you remember? God calls Abram from Ur of the Chaldees. Eventually, he's called Abraham. And God makes Abraham a promise. Contrary to what the covenant theologians may say, a promise that is still important today. And God says, Abraham, you see all those stars up there? I'm going to make your children like the stars. Like the sand of the sea, I'm going to raise up a generation behind you, and you're going to be the father of a nation, Abraham. Well, that all sounds good until you realize there's one big problem. We don't have any children. But God, in His miraculous fashion, arranged for that. Remember, Abraham and Sarah got ahead of God. And they came around with a plan. They said, you know what? We'll just give you my handmaid Abraham. And I'm sure that's what God was intending, because there's no way that I could have a child. And so then you have Ishmael is born of Hagar. And yet that's not the son of promise. God in His mercy, sometimes we get ahead of Him. And yet God, instead of just taking the plan and tossing it to the wind, God said, no, we're going to do this right. Abraham, you're going to be 100. Sarah, you're going to be 90. And you're going to be the proud parents of a bouncing baby boy. And hence you have really the exciting beginning of the nation of Israel. Now, let's fast forward and we come to the book of Exodus. And we find that now relatively young in Israel's history, we find them enslaved there in bondage to the Egyptians. And here they are calling to their God, wanting deliverance, begging for deliverance. And one day God says, all right, the time has come. I'm going to raise up a deliverer and I'm going to deliver you out of the hand of the Egyptians. Now, had we written the Bible, it would have been nuclear weapons and tanks arising out of the desert and just mowing down Pharaoh's armies, but not God. Couple has a baby. The baby's boy is named Moses. And Pharaoh has put out the edict. He's saying, listen, we're going to kill all the men children. There are too many Israelites, so we're going to fix that problem with a little population control. And Moses' parents, they say, nope, we're going to put this baby in a basket on the river, and we're going to put him away so that he's not killed by Pharaoh's decree. And as you would know it, in the sovereignty of God, let me ask you a question. Where does Moses wind up? For us in this room, many of us would have said, like, the worst place you can go. I mean, if Pharaoh's the one who made the decree and you wind up at Pharaoh's daughter's house, hand-delivered by the current, that's a bad thing. I mean, she's the daughter of the man that made the order. You know what I love about God? Is God doesn't think the way we think. And so God says, no, we're going to do it this way. She sees Moses. She's smitten. She says, oh, let's take him in. And she raises him as her own. Imagine with me now Moses, who you thought at best would be in poverty all of his life, now he's in the lap of luxury. The conveniences of Egypt, he has the education that Egypt has to offer. Everything's been handed to him, but then there comes a day. And it was a very important day in the life of Moses, where Moses made a conscious choice to identify with the Israelites rather than the Egyptians. And that day when Moses took the life of that Egyptian and it was discovered, he had to run to the backside of a desert and he stayed out there to escape Pharaoh's armies. And now do you understand the drastic change in Moses' life? Moses went from having it all to having nothing. Moses went from having everything at his command, hearing his voice's servants, and now all Moses hears is this. That's quite a change. When Moses was like, hey, I want you all to take care of all of my affairs. And now he's taking care of wandering sheep in the middle of nowhere. And again, our story takes a very strange twist. While minding his business and tending the sheep, he comes upon a burning bush, a bush that's burning, but yet it's not being consumed. And just like any curious Baptist, he stops to the side and he looks. And at that point, Moses hears a voice. Moses, take off your shoes. You're on holy ground. And then for the next few minutes, Moses argues with God. What was God trying to do? He was raising up an unlikely leader to go lead the nation of Israel out of Egypt. And Moses, at first, he's not very excited about it. Well, how will they know that you're the one that sent me? I mean, excuse after excuse after excuse. But finally, God prevails. And we find that this shepherd is now a spokesman for God, and he shows up at Pharaoh's doorstep with a brief but cutting message. He looks at Pharaoh and he says, God said, let my people go. Well, old Pharaoh didn't take very kindly to that. Matter of fact, Pharaoh's response is, who is God? Who's the Lord that I should obey Him? And he makes it known his opposition to Jehovah. And Moses performs miracles. And we find that his miracles prevail over the miracles that were copied by the magicians of Pharaoh's court. And they were a wonder and they were in amazement. And then at that point, Israel becomes the front seat spectators to miracle after miracle after miracle. You know, there's a great lesson. It's not to be preached tonight, but a great lesson to be learned in the 10 plagues. You can ooh and ah over the miracles of the water being turned to blood, lice and pestilence and everything else. You can ooh and ah over the supernatural nature of that. But don't you miss the lesson. And the lesson you learn is from that Pharaoh was taught, you know what, you may not be willing to do what God wants you to do, but He has a way of making you willing to go. You're here tonight and you're obstinate against God. There was somebody just like you, his name Pharaoh. Pharaoh said, I'm not letting these Israelites go. I'm not going to do that. But I'm going to tell you what, 10 plagues later, God got Pharaoh's attention. The final blow took place when the firstborn died and Pharaoh is weeping in his household. Israel's seen all of this. Let me tell you, Israel had not seen anything like what they had just seen in a span of duration. When those 10 plagues hit, and they're seeing the miraculous nature of them, I don't know what was happening in their hearts, but I think I would have been saying to my neighbor, I think God's going to get His attention. This is Jehovah. He's working on Pharaoh. And finally, when the 10th plague comes, Pharaoh says, that's it, I've had enough. Throws his hands up and he tells Israel, listen, get out of here. You take everything with you, including the kitchen sink. You say, does it really say that? Look in the Hebrew, you might find it somewhere. But he was saying, Pharaoh said, take everything, take it all, just get out of here. I don't want to see you again. I'll tell you what, had I been Israel at that point, I think I would have just been packing up and I'd have been saying to my neighbors, boy, that sure was great, wasn't it? Oh, Pharaoh, he's stubborn as a mule, but boy, God got his attention. Did you see those plagues? I mean, I would have been rehearsing it blow by blow. You talk about the 10 commandments, they're talking about right now the 10 plagues. They're like, listen to this. Every one that came down the pipe, do you get this? What am I telling you? Israel, they were spectators to miracle after miracle after miracle. Well, then the time comes as they're heading out, as they're going down the road. You know what? Mr. Pharaoh begins to change his mind. He says, you know what? That's it. We're going after them. And so here we find Israel now in Exodus 14. In front of them is the Red Sea, and behind them are the approaching hoofbeats of Pharaoh's army. And they are scared to death. You find Israel, after they saw everything that God had done, you would have thought, we would say, oh, I'll tell you what, I would have said, listen here, look at all that we've seen. God's going to deliver us. But instead, you find them paralyzed with fear. You know why? Because they doubted God. And you know what I found thousands of years later? Not millions, for those of you who think you're evolutionists, which I don't think there are any of you here tonight. But you know what? Thousands of years ago, that happened to the nation of Israel. And you know what? Even tonight, that happens in the hearts of God's children. You're paralyzed by doubt. You're overwhelmed. I can't do this. I can't make this. I can't handle this. There's no way out. There's no way forward. And there we get to the point of despair. And so tonight, I want to tell you several things related to doubting God. It's not a homiletical masterpiece tonight, but it'll be some statements hopefully you can understand. Now, in light of what we've read, number one, I want you to understand this evening that everyone in this room is capable of doubting God. You say, why do you start there tonight? Because I think it's a great place for us just to level the playing field. For years, I heard Brother Comfort say here at Ambassador, and there are no inferiors, no superiors, only equals. And I'm telling you tonight, I don't care whether you're a faculty or a staff member or you're a visitor or you're a student tonight, listen to me, you're capable of doubting God. Don't you fool yourself. You're here tonight and you say, well, I'll tell you, I don't struggle with doubt. Well, I've got news for you. You're better than Abraham. Go ahead, compare yourself to him tonight. Yeah, Abraham, he doubts God when he's heading down to Egypt. He doubts God at various instances of his life. If you don't struggle with it, or you never wrestle with it, or you never come to a point where your faith is challenged, you're a lot better than Abraham. And I've got news for you, you're not better than Abraham. You've just deceived yourself. You're here tonight and you don't want to admit that you've come to an uncomfortable point of your life. Well, listen, Moses knows exactly how that feels. You look at the patriarchs in the Bible, you find that they came to seasons of doubt and they had to wrestle with it. And do you know how they got to the book of Hebrews? It wasn't by being perfect, it was by persevering in faith. I love Hebrews 11. I read it and it's like God's forgotten all the bad stuff in the book of Genesis. We're really quick to bring it up, aren't we? But you know how they got there? It's not because they were perfect, but I'll tell you, whenever their faith was challenged and they faltered, they got back up and they went forward. But everybody in this room tonight is capable of doubting God. Don't you read Exodus chapter 14 and think you're any better than the nation of Israel. But number two tonight, I want to make this plain that doubt will cause you to love the bondage of Egypt more than the deliverance of God. Doubt will cause you to love the bondage of Egypt more than the deliverance of God. You say, where do you get that from? I get it from verse number 11. Verse 10, the Bible says they were sore afraid. Verse 11, they said unto Moses, because there were no graves in Egypt, hast thou taken us away to die in the wilderness? You say, why do you read it like that? Because I certainly don't think they said it this way. Because there were no graves in Egypt, hast thou taken us away to die in the wilderness? There's some of you preacher boys tonight. You could improve your preaching greatly by just reading the Bible like you mean it. You really could. You get up there and you read it like it's some fast speech. You know, just think about what you're reading every once in a while. Verse 12, they said, is not this the word that we did tell thee in Egypt? Let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians. They said, don't you remember what we told you back there? Leave us alone. We like this. For it had been better, here is the telling phrase, for it had been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness. You know what? Doubt had affected their minds and their memories in a horrible way. And it'll do the same to you. I mean, I look at this and I say, really? This is, isn't your memory a little bit faulty? Don't you remember what the Egyptians did to you? Sometimes I talk to the old timers, and I know the older I get, the more I find myself talking just like one. Except the prices are a little more expensive back in my day, and things weren't quite as primitive. But, you know, I've talked to some of the old timers, and they say things like this. They say, boy, I remember the good old days when we didn't have running water. We used outhouses. Those were good old days. And I'll be honest, I hear that and I say, really? In February? Oh, I remember the good old days when we didn't have air conditioning and we just raised up the windows, and I think, I don't know if those were as good. You must have forgotten about the sweat. And they might say, well, we didn't pay the power bill that you pay today. And I'd say, I'll give you that, but you don't remember the flies and the sweat and just, your memory, something's just, it's not as grand as you think it was. But you know what doubt does? Doubt will cause a person in this room to look back and say, you know what? Maybe life was better back there when I wasn't saved. Or maybe life was a lot better when I wasn't yielded to the Lord and I just did whatever I wanted. You know what? Christians talk to themselves that way, just like the Israelites talk to themselves. But it's amazing to me how the devil can change your mind in a certain way where, you know what, you don't recollect just how bad Egypt was. I want to stop for just a moment. I want to tell you what a beautiful picture the Red Sea experience is when it comes to the matter of salvation. Let me tell you something tonight. When God delivers you from Egypt, that's a wonderful thing. And you need to remember it every now and then. As a matter of fact, you probably ought to remember it a lot more frequently than you do. Now for me, I'll tell you what, I'd not rob banks and set up a big meth ring in Yadkinville, North Carolina, and been in all kinds of sin at the age of 12. But I'm going to tell you something. What I was delivered from, I'm glad I was delivered from it. Some of you tonight, you're like, well, I wasn't raised in a broken home, or I was raised in a Christian home. We didn't have all of those things. Listen to me. If you were delivered by the blood of Christ, listen to me, you are just as delivered as any of us. And you know how you were delivered? It was by faith. It was by trusting Christ It was by placing your faith in God. And young people, I'm telling you, the same way you were saved, it's the same way to live as a Christian, by faith. But Israel looked back and said, boy, life's a lot better. Life was a lot better. No, it wasn't. That's foolishness. You say, well, I'll tell you, before I got right with God, life was not as hard as it is in Bible college. Let me tell you something. That's what the devil wants you to think. But I'll assure you of this. When the world has its way with you, the Bible says the way of the transgressor is hard. And you may have pleasure in sin for a season. You may hit some difficulty this semester. You're like, oh man, it was a lot. No, it wasn't. Stop it. You say, that's not very kind. I know it's not, but it is the devil manipulating your mind, so to speak. You can't think that way. I promise you that whatever God took away from you when He delivered you from Egypt, He will give you far better in the days to come. You've got to see it that way. And some of you tonight, you're paralyzed by doubt and you begin to look back and you say to yourself, boy, that looks a lot better than what I'm going through right now. Oh, listen, that's just the deceit of the devil. But number three tonight, I want you to learn from Israel that when we focus on the visible, we doubt the invisible. When we focus on the visible, we doubt the invisible. Now, the world hears this and says, you're crazy. That's the world in its ruthless way would say, that's a stupid way to live. When you believe the invisible more than the visible, I mean, listen, the invisible doesn't pay the bills. It's this dollar bill here. That's the way the world thinks, you know. It's by what I see. It's by what's before me. But here was the mistake that Israel made, and it's the mistake that many of us make in our Christian lives. When the approaching hoofbeats of Pharaoh's army are more real to us than the promises of God. Now, I believe these pews you're in tonight are real. But if I had to say what's more real, God or those pews, I'd say God. That may not be... I don't know. It may not be logically correct or scientifically accurate in some analytical mind, but I'm going to tell you, God created all the elements that these pews are made of, and if there was anybody I was going to say more real, I'll tell you, it's God. I've never seen Him, but I see His beauty every day. I'm going to tell you, these sunsets in Lattimore can be nice sometimes. Boy, there are times I peer out there and I'm like, man, they are beautiful. But God's the one who did that. Listen, I've never seen God with my two eyes, but I see miracle day after day. I see the creation of God. And on it goes. But you know what happens? Difficulty comes, it brings us to our knees, and we count the visible more than we do the invisible. I'm really amazed at verse 13. I want you to see it with me. It says, "And Moses said unto the people, Fear ye not, stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which He will show to you this day. For the Egyptians, whom you have seen today..." Now listen to how Moses words this. I love it. "Ye shall see them again no more forever." Why in the world did Moses state it like that? No more forever. That's like saying the same thing. He must be getting senile. No, I don't think it's a man getting senile. I think it's God being very dogmatic, and He's telling Israel, listen, I make you a promise. You're not going to see them anymore, and I'll tag on for good measure forever. But I'm amazed at Moses and hearing his posture, his leadership. Somebody asked me the other day, some of my favorite Bible characters, Moses would have to be one of them. Moses got all these people, and what if they just said, what have you done, brought us out here to die? That'll make you feel good as a preacher who's leading a group, right? You get out there on a Sunday and the whole congregation's looking at you and they're like, what, you brought us to a dead end, pal. But Moses didn't fall to pieces. Moses didn't bite his nails and say, you know what, I'll tell you what, listen, Moses could not have reacted the way that he did had he not acknowledged the importance of the invisible. And what does He tell them? fear not. That's the very thing that they were doing. He said, don't fear. Stand still and see the salvation of the Lord. Here's the thing that I really believe about that with Moses. I'm not even convinced at this point he knows how God's going to get them out of this mess. I mean, for him to say, stop, hey, God's going to get us out of this. Some of us have been like, all right, Lord, now what? You know why Moses could do that? You know why he could be a leader the way he was? Because he saw the invisible more than he saw the visible. Young people, I'm telling you, there's some great things that God has in store for you. 10 years from now, one of you guys, maybe you'll be pastoring a church. Another one, you'll be out in evangelistic meetings. Somebody, a song leader. A young lady, you're married to a preacher, and you're like, I have no clue what we're doing, but God's called me to do this, and I love it, and I just got to go forward. Listen, 10 years from now, you have no idea of what you're going to be doing, but right now, you've got to stop doubting God, and you've got to go forward. You've got to see the invisible more than the visible. I'm talking about when the school bill, when Mr. Bunn is more real to you than God. Now, don't some of you do what some students do when the bills are due and Mr. Bunn asks to see you. All of a sudden, we have to call the Cleveland County Sheriff's Department to come locate you because you have disappeared. This isn't something to say, listen, you just avoid Mr. Bunn. No, what I'm saying is this. I'm saying when you have a school bill or a need that needs to be met, you see the invisible more than you see the visible. You say, well, I don't like that. Well, I'm telling you, that's what God's ordained. You can't get around it. Just better walk by faith. But number four tonight, I want you to see this, that doubt causes us, this is a horrible thing, I'm ashamed to confess it tonight. Doubt causes us to question God's character. Doubt causes us to question God's character. Again, verses 11 and 12, you know what they're filled with? Question marks. And sometimes questions can be bad things. It's like when children first learn the question, why? Why? Why is the sky blue? Because God made it that way. Why? Because He likes blue. Why? And then, you know, then you get into the speculative and finally you're like, I don't have any more answers. Stop it. But let me tell you what doubt does. Doubt causes Israel to question God and question Moses, and doubt causes us to do the same thing. Sometimes doubt causes us to question God's love and His care for us. Some of you newer students, you're put under the gun. Right now, maybe it's a mountaintop experience. Everything is going on and it's keeping you busy and you're excited. But you know, about 3 or 4 weeks in, that excitement just sort of... If you think your opening revival week, that's the way it's always going to be. Some of you are like, man, God's reinvigorated me this week. But as you get to going through the semester, there's new challenges that come. And sometimes it wears on you. And sometimes you'll find yourself sitting in the commons or in your dorm room or out and about somewhere. And you begin to doubt God's love and His care for you. Now Israel feels like they've just been left to die in the wilderness. Let me tell you, when you feel that way, just know that the way you feel is wrong. I've felt wrong sometimes. I've learned my feelings are just not perfect. If I lived my life by my feelings, I'd be in jail right now. I really would, and you would too. You'll get to a point, you say, Lord, do You care for me? You know, the disciples, they were at a crossroads like that. Here Jesus is asleep in the boat, and they come to Him, and I want you to listen to what they say. Master, carest Thou not that we perish? My soul, that's a strong indictment, isn't it? Oh, I don't think they just came to Jesus and said, excuse me, sir. excuse me, but we were just wondering, just the thought maybe just occurred to us that maybe you don't really care for us right now. I mean, we're about to die. No, I don't think they went into it very strategically. I think they went into it just like us and basically raised an indictment. Lord, don't you care? We're about to perish. You know what? Disciples raise the question, and Bible college students and faculty members and staff members do too. And that's where you just have to remember, even though you may feel that way, God gives you a divine invitation in 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 7 when He says, casting all your cares upon Him, for He careth for you. You know, a songwriter wrote a song indicating the doubt in his heart about the care of God for him. He said, does Jesus care when my heart is pained? And the last verse, he says, does Jesus care when I've said goodbye to the dearest on earth to me? You ought to read those verses. But young person, I'll tell you the key to that song. It's not living in the verses, it's living in the chorus. Oh, yes, He cares. I know He cares. His heart is touched with my grief. The pain of separation that you're bearing right now, maybe for some of you, the pain of an intense workload being thrown upon your shoulders, the devil whispers into your ear, he doesn't care, but the Bible says, God says, cast it on me. I want your care because I care for you. Sometimes doubt, it causes us to call God's power and His ability into question. Oh God, can you get us out of this mess? God, can you deliver me? God, can you help me? And sometimes if we're not careful, we let our circumstances dictate our theology. Do you understand the difference? If you let your circumstances dictate your theology, you'll have a small God. But when you get that thing right, and you let your theology guide you through your circumstances, you'll remember that with God, all things are possible. And sometimes we doubt God's Word and His promises to us. Lord, I know You said this, but I sure don't feel like You're going to do this. It's a shame we doubt God's promises. There's never been a truer person, truer individual than God. I mean, God is truth. Everything He says, you can rely on it, but sometimes we doubt God's promises. I was an only child, and being raised that way, I was deprived of the sibling rivalries that would take place in some of your households. But you know, going from an only child to having three children and watching them grow up, I really learned a lot. And I remember when my daughter was just really small, her two older brothers had taken it upon themselves to scare her to death. And they did a great job of it. So much so that she didn't want to sleep by herself at night. It took us a while to break her out of that. But I mean, it was to the point she just was just terrified. She was like, and so she'd come and sleep with me and my wife. And, you know, as much as I love my children, that gets old after a while. You say, you sound very callous. Well, when your ribs are bruised and you're pushed out of the bed enough times, you just figure, you know, something's got to change. And so I made up my mind that something was going to change. And so I took my daughter up to the room where the boys were at. They were laying in their beds. I said, all right. I said, that's it. I said, she's sleeping with y'all tonight. And it was like, no, please don't let her do that. I'm like, nope, nope, listen, you've scared her to death. And she's going to sleep with you. You'll just help her get over it. And they're like, no, we'll do anything. And I was like, would you stop scaring her? Yes, we'll stop scaring her. Just please. I said, all right. And so with a little fatherly negotiation, I fixed that part of the problem. But then I march her downstairs. And then, you know, we've got this room for her, but she's scared to death. I was terribly scared of the dark myself. I just didn't have other siblings to make it worse. And so anyway, there'd be nights, you know, she would say, "Daddy, would you come sleep with me?" And I was like, "Yeah, I'll come in there." And she's like, "No, I want you to come sleep in here all night." And so carefully, I just say, "Well, you know, honey, I'll come in there. I'll lay down here and there with you for a while." And she's like, "No, I want you in here all night." And so I'd lay down and we'd start talking, you know, "Oh, it's a nice day and such, you know." And I was like, "Yeah." And then she said, "Now you are going to stay in here all night, aren't you?" And I'd use the diversion tactic. I was like, "Well, honey, it sure was a nice day. Boy, did you see the sunshine?" "Oh, yes." And I mean, for the next 5 minutes, flowers, grass, everything else. And then right in mid-sentence, "Dad, you are going to stay in here all night, aren't you? Hey, how do you like that bicycle that Nanny and Pap gave you? I mean, that, oh, yes, it glides, the tires don't go flat like my old one, and it just goes out there. It glides, and I mean, right in mid-sentence, "Daddy, you are going to stay in here all night, aren't you?" "Yes, honey, I will stay in here all night." And after that, she looked down at me and she said, "Dad, you promise?" At that point, and then I'm just like, "Honey, I've said yes, I promise, I will." I'll tell you that story. Why? Because you know what? As little kids, we enjoyed the parents, the promise of a parent. But there's nothing wrong with you as a Bible college student enjoying the promises of your Heavenly Father. And I'm telling you, there's some of you, you better not just seek to live by feeling or it's going to be a roller coaster. And when those feelings come, sometimes what you know and what you feel are two different things. But do not let doubt so paralyze you that you cast God's promises to the side. You doubt His ability and you fail and you think, "You know what, God, can you really do this? God, do you care?" That's the dead end of doubt. And we don't want you there. Number five tonight, I want you to see this. That doubt will flee if you go forward. Verse 14, the Bible says, "The Lord shall fight for you and ye shall hold your peace." Verse 15, "And the Lord said unto Moses, Wherefore criest thou unto me? Speak unto the children of Israel that they go forward." It's a little bit humorous in the conversation. It's like God saying, "Moses, you're done with me. Why talk to me anymore about this? You need to go to them." And this is how they get rid of it. Just say, "Moses, go to them and tell them to go forward." How do you get rid of doubt? You go to Walmart in the pharmacy section, and right beside the deodorant are doubt pills you can take. No, it's not that simple. You know, everything's a pill, or everything's a cream, or a lotion, or whatever the case, or an essential oil in our day sometimes. Throwing some shade to some of you frankincense wearers and such, all right? My wife's back there laughing because she has tried to sell me onto it sometimes that it actually does work. And I will admit, I have seen results, all right? So, but anyway, let's go on. How do you get rid of doubt? Let me tell you something. Doubt is not going to be gotten rid of necessarily in the way that you expect it to. I think had I been the Israelites and God said, "All right, Bill, you're right there in the midst. What do you want me to do?" I'd say, "I want you just to remove all of them now. Or take us and just transport us to the other side and let me just close my eyes and say, 'All right, Lord, you just do this.' And when I open my eyes, everything's going to be okay." It's sort of like you get in a jam when you're in college and you've had a bad day and you go in that room and nobody else is in there and you lay down your head and you close your eyes and you think, "Boy, if I'm going to wake up and everything's going to be fine. That term paper's going to be done. My school bill's going to be taken care of." You know, there's only one way that Israel could get rid of doubt. And you know what that was? That was to just keep stepping. forward. Some of you tonight, you say, I don't know how I'm going to pay my school bill. Listen, I don't either, but I know one thing. If God's called you to do it, you've just got to keep going forward. You know, some people get an idea in the first couple of weeks of school, this isn't for me, I'm packing up and quitting. And it's not so much that the will of God's led them to be a quitter. By the way, I don't think God's will leads you to be a quitter. I don't think it's so much God's leading them to be a quitter as much as they've been so paralyzed by doubt. And they say, you know, the problem is, it's how can I take care of this? How can I do this? You're asking the wrong questions. Because you'll get depressed asking those questions, because the truth is you can't. You can't part the Red Sea. You can't do that, but I'll tell you, God can part it. And when He does, have enough sense to just keep stepping. You say, I've never seen aquariums on both sides like this. Just keep stepping, all right? You can see the show and you can see the miraculous, but you better keep going ahead. That's how you get rid of it. So I've had a real nagging feeling in my heart here these first couple of weeks, and I've just been so overwhelmed. Listen to me. God said, you tell Israel to go forward. And when they did, they saw the greatest miracle they'd ever seen up to that point. Here's the last thing I share with you, and it's really a conclusion. Some of the sweetest songs you ever sing come after a season of doubt. Let me say it again. Some of the sweetest songs you'll ever sing will come after a season of doubt. You might say, well, why do you think that? That sounds like a poetic way to end a message. You ever read Exodus 15? The rest of Exodus 14, the Israelites cross the Red Sea when Moses stretches out his hand. Pharaoh's armies are in pursuit. The water falls in on them, drowns them, kills them. And you know what Israel did? They sang about it. You know, Brother Robertson and Brother Reem, when they get up here to lead music, wouldn't you be a little bit stunned if one of them came before you and said, all right, now we're going to sing a song. This is a little bit different than what you're used to. But tonight, we're going to sing a song about death, about drowning, about dying. Let's lift it up to the Lord tonight. You'd say, man alive, what's wrong with Brother Robertson? Brother Reem's been pounding those keys too hard. It's affected him. I want you to look with me at chapter 15 for a moment, verse 1. Then sang Moses unto the children of Israel this song unto the Lord, and spake, saying, I will sing unto the Lord, for He hath triumphed gloriously. The horse and his rider hath He thrown into the sea. For sake of time, I'm not going to read it in great depths, but when you hear things like the depths have covered them, they sank into the bottom as a stone. You're like, wow, that's quite the song. But don't you miss it. You know what? What a time of rejoicing it was when they survived their season of doubt. And they said, wasn't that great? Their songs in the Old Testament certainly don't. This doesn't read in a hymnal. I can't see four-part harmony. I can't tell you what is what stands, and it certainly doesn't rhyme. But I'll tell you, it was just as much a song that pleased the Lord as any one you've ever sung. Why? Because they sang of the deliverance of God. I can't tell you how God delivers you necessarily sometimes. I can't tell you exactly how that's going to happen and how much you're going to be brought to the end of yourself and when God's timing is. But there is one promise I can make you. When God brings you across, you'll have a sweet song. I'm telling you, some of the sweetest songs you'll ever sing will come after a season of doubt. There was a businessman in Chicago. In 1871, he lost a son to scarlet fever. And then after a majority of his ownings were destroyed in the great Chicago fire, after he was trying to put his life back together, he took his wife and his four kids and he said, "We're going to go on a vacation." Vacation back then is a little bit different than vacation now. We think of cruises and planes. Basically, you just had ships that carried cargo and passengers. And because of a last-minute business dealing, he wasn't able to go right away, but he assured his wife, "You go ahead and you take our four daughters and you head across the ocean and I'll be there to join you soon enough." Here was a man who had lost a son to the scarlet fever. He had lost his possessions in the great fire of Chicago. He sends his wife and his four daughters on a ship only to receive a telegram, and his wife simply puts these words on it: "Saved alone." Realizing that his four daughters had been lost in the greatest naval accident of that day, it would only be rivaled later on by the sinking of the Titanic. And as any burdened father and husband would do, he got on the first boat, and as he was making his way, it was while on the journey to be reunited with his wife over the same waters that claimed the lives of his four girls, that man wrote these words: "When peace like a river attendeth my way, when sorrows like sea billows roll, whatever my lot, thou hast taught me to say it is well with my soul. Though Satan should buffet, and trials should come, let this blessed assurance control, that Christ hath regarded my helpless estate. It is well with my soul." You know, there's probably not a more stirring song that we sing in our dorm devotions, that we sing in our congregational music. But you know what most people are aware of? The great price that was paid for that song to ever be written. Young people, I'm here to tell you, there's times where you have to suffer through sometimes the hardest things. And right now you think Bible college is hard. This is just training ground. Like, you're not very encouraging. You're just saying it's going to get worse. I'm not saying it's going to get worse. I'm just saying it's going to get more intense. But the same faith that you can manifest to guide you through Bible college is the same faith that can guide you through the future. And I promise you, the songs will only get better and better. You know what may make or break some of you tonight? Whether or not you're going to choose to doubt God anymore. Some of you, all you can hear is the approaching hoofbeats of Pharaoh's army. That'll drive you crazy. Instead, you listen to casting all your cares upon Him, for He careth for you. May God deliver us from doubting Him tonight. Let's bow our heads together.